This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
All right, everybody, guys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter. And on Instagram at MichaelRitter5, also the host of the Football Function Podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and every other podcast platform for the most part. You should be able to find it. But for today's episode of the SmackDown Review, we're going to be covering the SmackDown that aired on August 6th, 2021 in Tampa, Florida. It does feel good to be back covering a Friday Night SmackDown, as some of you, or most of you should know, I stepped in for Matt for the Monday Night Raw review this past Monday, and I did have a good time. It was fun covering Monday Night Raw. However, there was one downside to it, and that was the audio. I'm sure you guys all noticed it sounded like I was turned up extremely loud. That was a mic problem. I'm not really sure what happened, but that specific microphone has kind of been giving me fits for a while now. So I guess if there's one positive to take away from that whole situation, it's that it pushed me over the edge to finally invest in a better microphone. So now I do have a much better microphone, much more quality. So you might be able to tell the difference. You might not. If you do, then I'm sure you're enjoying it. And I definitely am as well. This bad boy is definitely a step up and a pretty big upgrade. So I'm glad to have some more legit equipment here to work with. But that was mainly the only negative that I had about Monday Night Raw. Honestly, I enjoyed getting to cover it. I felt like the whole process itself went smooth as far as watching Raw and then recording it at a timely manner. I literally hopped on and started recording it at 10:13 p.m. And here at Central Time, Raw ends at 10 o'clock p.m. So I hopped on almost immediately after Raw went off the air, and I got the show in pretty early. So I was happy about that. The only bad thing is the audio itself sucks. So I do want to apologize. I'm sure that was pretty tough to listen to for some of you. I listened to it only because I wanted to hear how bad it was, and it was pretty bad. So I do want to apologize once again. And with this new mic, hopefully we won't have that problem again anytime soon. But let's get back to the reason why all of you are here, and that is for the SmackDown review. This SmackDown itself wasn't anything too special. Wasn't a bad episode, but it was just kind of your regular episode of SmackDown. We did have a handful of matches, as well as some matches made official for SummerSlam. The Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks match is official for the SmackDown Women's Championship, as well as Edge versus Seth Rollins. So I feel like those two matches are going to make the card even better than what it already is, given some of the matches that have been announced, and it does have a little bit of a WrestleMania feel to it. So you can definitely appreciate that they are trying to pull out all the stops to put on a good show at SummerSlam in Las Vegas, because this is really going to be the first actual big time event, you know. I don't know how many people are going to have in that stadium. They've been rumored to have over 60,000. I know it's a big stadium. They're going to have a Super Bowl there before long, so it's definitely a pretty big spectacle, and I think that the card itself is going to reflect that, and I think that it's going to be a hell of a show, just looking at some of the matches that they have already announced. But let's see, this SmackDown started, and I'm not going to really go in chronological order this time. I'm just going to kind of go off some of the bigger events and then talk about some of the smaller things that happened, because like I said, I mean, the SmackDown kind of flew by, like some always do, just being that it's 2 hours. When some of the matches take up a pretty big chunk of the show, it's no surprise that sometimes the rest of the show just seems to fly by. There were some backstage interviews, as well as, like I said, some promos, some pretty good promos that ended up leading into official matches being announced. But this SmackDown in particular started with Sasha Banks coming out to the ring and explaining her actions last week, basically just saying that Bianca Belair used her. And she basically took credit for everything that Sasha has accomplished in the SB and main eventing WrestleMania. She says that none of that would have happened without Sasha Banks. Who knows? She could be telling the truth, but I don't really know. It's all hypothetical, so you can't really dive too far into that. Just take it for what it is, and Sasha Banks trying to get underneath Bianca Belair's skin, and that's exactly what happens, because Bianca does come out, and she addresses Sasha Banks, and Sasha keeps trying to push her buttons And that eventually leads Belair to giving Sasha what she wants, which is a SmackDown Women's Championship match. And I guess that one is supposed to be advertised for SummerSlam. That's where the match was. In this specific segment, that's where it was announced. So that brings out Zelina Vega saying, no, do you not remember last week? I'm supposed to be next in line. You accepted my challenge. So what's the deal? So Bianca quickly says, all right, I'm going to fight Sasha at SummerSlam, which leaves me free tonight. So I'll defend my championship against you. So at that moment, we're expecting to get a SmackDown Women's Championship match between Zelina Vega and Bianca Belair. However, that does not happen because Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce kind of squash that before it really gets any type of momentum, saying that a match like that cannot be put together on such short notice without any time to promote it, without any time to advertise it and basically try to market it a little bit or just build up a good program. And I agree. I feel like even though I don't think that Zelina Vega and Bianca Belair is that marquee of a matchup, I wouldn't have complained if it would have been on free TV. But the fact that they basically told Zelina Vega to continue to prove herself and prove that she's worthy and that she will be next in line as soon as SummerSlam's over and Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks officially have a winner of that match. So I guess we can take that for what it's worth, and I'm sure that Zelina Vega won't just let that go under the radar or just to the wayside. She's going to make sure that she gets that championship opportunity, and I do hope that she gets it. We'll see what she does. You guys know how I feel. I'm not necessarily extremely high on Zelina Vega as far as a championship in-ring competitor, but she's going to get this opportunity, so we will see what she does with it, and I'm excited to figure out if I am wrong, and I hope I am. I don't want to see her just, oh, well, she can't wrestle in the ring, so I guess we're going to have to just let her go be a mouthpiece. No, if she can go in the ring and she can actually make it believable, I'm all for it, and I would love to see her have a nice little in-ring career here on SmackDown. Moving on to another big thing that happened here on SmackDown, Finn Balor. Now, Finn Balor, as you remember from last week on SmackDown, was supposed to get a championship opportunity and sign a contract for a one-on-one Universal Championship match against Roman Reigns at SummerSlam. However, Baron Corbin interfered with that, and then John Cena interfered with that, ultimately leaving John Cena the one who signed the contract. And there is a whole nother story going on there with Paul Heyman using Tom Brady signing with the Buccaneers as an example, saying that basically he could have went in there and signed Tom Brady's contract and he would be the quarterback for the Buccaneers. Just putting a little bit of weight into his promo, and you can appreciate that because when somebody has legitimate facts in their promo, in my opinion, it just makes it a little bit better. I mean, obviously, I feel like I'm not alone in feeling that way, but Finn Balor comes out to the ring, and you already know he's going to be pissed off at Baron Corbin, but he also talks about John Cena too, as he should. And he says that the old Finn Balor would just smile and forget about that and just keep on moving forward, but not this Finn. That Finn Balor is dead, is actually what he said. And Finn's going to do something about it, and he's not going to stop, and he'll even go through John Cena to get to Roman Reigns to get the Universal Championship match. And that's an important part right there because he mentioned Roman Reigns' name. And that's pretty much the whole reason why Roman Reigns decides to come out. And that's exactly what he does. He comes out to confront Finn Balor and basically just stops him right there and says, whoa, listen, dude, I was going to give you that opportunity. Me and you were sitting there about to sign the contract. I didn't tell Baron Corbin to come out. I damn sure didn't tell John Cena to come out. So I'm not sure why you're putting my name in your mouth saying all this stuff about me whenever I was going to give you the opportunity. So basically that kind of sets up a little bit of Roman Reigns having some more animosity towards Finn Balor whenever he feels like there was no reason for Finn to be upset with Roman whenever he wasn't the one who interfered, obviously. Finn does eventually push Roman Reigns in the back and he kind of falls out of the ring. And then Roman gets back in the ring and they kind of have a little bit of a face-off, but the Usos end up attacking Finn Balor from behind, which sets up a little bit of a two-on-one. Roman Reigns leaves the ring with Paul Heyman, and he's kind of starting to walk back up the ramp, assuming that the Usos can handle Finn Balor just two-on-one. And they start to do for a little while. Finn Balor is laying in the middle of the ring while Jey Uso is on the top turnbuckle about to hit a splash. And then Finn kind of trips Jimmy Uso or just sweeps his legs and puts him in the position that Finn was in, causing Jey Uso to hit him with the splash. And I thought that was just probably one of the coolest parts of the entire show. That was just really talented of Finn Balor, or just a good idea, I guess. And for Finn to pull it off right there, because there's really not a lot of margin for error to actually make it look good. And I feel like they did a pretty good job there. But Finn at that moment absolutely starts beating the hell out of those two. And he gets the upper hand on both of the Usos. He beats both of them, sends them out of the ring, and then turns his attention to Roman Reigns, who takes off his jacket, makes his way back to the ring, because he was all the way at the top of the ramp while Finn Balor was handling the Usos. So once he figures out that Finn Balor got the better of them, he makes his way back to the ring, and that's whenever Finn and Roman Reigns have a little bit of a collision. And as you would expect, they kind of go back and forth a little bit. Finn hits a sling blade, and he kind of has Roman Reigns set up where he was about to try to drop kick him into the turnbuckles and set him up for the coup de grace, but the Usos end up getting back up, kind of getting themselves involved and stopping Finn Balor from that happening, making it a 3-on-1 situation, and Roman Reigns begins the beatdown on Finn Balor, ends it with a guillotine, and stands victorious over him. And I know that was the ending segment of the show, so it is kind of weird talking about that in the middle of the show, basically. But I just felt like I wanted to touch on the two important parts first. That's kind of what Matt normally does on Raw, so I kind of wanted to do it here on SmackDown this week and to see how it goes. And it is a good thing to do because it's fresh on your mind. It's the thing that happened last. Because the match itself, which was advertised as Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin, it was a 6-minute squash match. Finn Balor won very easily, and that's when he picks up the mic and cuts that promo. So this was advertised as the main event, Finn Balor and Baron Corbin. And the match started at, 9:38. Or actually 8:38, 9:38 Eastern time, but 8:38 my time. And the match was over by 8:46, so it wasn't very long at all. And I knew right then, okay, well, there's still 14 minutes left to SmackDown. Something's obviously going to happen. And it ended up being that brawl that took place where Finn got the better of the Usos, and ultimately the entire bloodline got the better of Finn Balor and left him laying there. But he's not going to give up. He's going to continue to be in the picture here, and he's going to kind of be the guy who is in the way of this Roman Reigns and John Cena dream match, kind of similar to how Daniel Bryan was for Roman Reigns and Edge, although a little bit different. I don't think this is going to end up being a triple threat. But speaking about John Cena, he wasn't here on SmackDown either. He wasn't on Raw last week, and he wasn't here on SmackDown, so I don't know what report was stated that he was going to appear on every Raw, every SmackDown, and every live event up until SummerSlam, but I don't think that was very accurate because this is two shows in a row that he isn't there, and I'm not really complaining. I don't want him to get stale or people to get tired of it and start booing him, because they were actually chanting his name during that ending segment of the show. Whenever Finn Balor was in the ring, the crowd was chanting Cena, and that's still kind of weird to hear since for the longest time, the fans absolutely despised John Cena, and they were very vocal about it, so they made it well known. But anyways, Finn Balor is definitely going to continue pursuing Roman Reigns, and I like it. I want to see Finn Balor in this main event picture and eventually get that one-on-one match for the Universal Championship. And if that happens, then we'll see what he does from there. Hopefully it's on somebody that isn't Roman Reigns, because I don't think Finn Balor is going to be the guy who they choose to end up taking that championship off of him. So maybe during this shakeup, he might be better suited going to Raw. And I mean, he just came back to SmackDown. The SmackDown that I was at in Houston was his return to SmackDown. So I really hope that he doesn't go to Raw, but he'd have a better opportunity at capturing that top title, I feel like, if he was on Monday Night Raw. But continuing on here in the show to some other things that happened that weren't necessarily as noteworthy or as important. One thing I did feel like it caught my interest a little bit was this Jey Uso versus Dominic Mysterio match. And the reason why is because I feel like we got a little juicy twist from the Mysterio side of this whole program. And the reason why I say that is because Rey Mysterio and Dominic had a little bit of a backstage interview or encounter. Basically, the camera was there watching them talk backstage before Dominic's match. And they're kind of talking, and Rey Mysterio is giving him a little bit more advice. And he says that last week he appreciates him coming in the clutch at the very end and doing to the Usos what they did to him a week before. But he says that he didn't need his help, although he made sure to add that at the end. I do appreciate you doing that, although you know I didn't need your help. And then he tells him to get ready for his match. And then Dominic adds at the very end of his little, you know, shtick thing that he was saying to his dad, he basically says, well, keep in mind, I don't need your help either tonight. So that was a little weird for me. I mean, I'm not necessarily here for a Mysterio split. I guess I could say, because I mean, even during the match, we saw this kind of pop up again because Rey Mysterio kind of got involved. Well, it was really Jimmy Uso, because it was Dominik and Jay one-on-one, but they both had their tag team partner in their corner. And Jimmy Uso was constantly getting involved during the match. He just kept doing, you know, little heel tactics. He actually got away with actually hitting Dominik a couple times, but one time in particular, Dominik hit the 619, and then he was heading to the top turnbuckle, and he was about to hit the splash. Jimmy Uso looked like he was about to get involved again. Rey Mysterio intercepts him in the air, kind of drops him a little bit, but for whatever reason, instead of just taking the aid and the help from his father, Dominik just kind of stares down there as if he's never seen that type of thing before. And that little bit of an encounter right there was enough for Dominik to get distracted. And as he jumped off the turnbuckle, Jimmy Uso moved out of the way and ended up beating Dominik. So he got the win. And Dominik was frustrated. Michael Cole said Dominik definitely frustrated after the match, and Rey Mysterio was shown putting his hands over his head, just kind of disappointed in himself that he got involved and cost his son the match. Supposedly, I don't feel like he cost his son the match. I feel like he did what he needed to do to help his son win the match, and his son foolishly took his eyes off the ball, and he started paying attention to his dad whenever his dad was clearly doing the right thing. I don't really know. I feel like they're just kind of starting to tease a little bit of them having a wedge in between them or something. I don't know. Maybe they're not seeing eye to eye, or they're trying to kickstart Dominik's singles career. I don't really know what it is, but I don't need to see it. I don't want to see Rey Mysterio and Dominik Mysterio have a program or a feud against each other. To be honest, I barely even want to see them have tag team matches together. But, I mean, they're going to, and I'm fine with it, but I'm not sitting here banging the table for it. I felt like whenever the Usos took the championships off of them, it was the right move, even though it was on their pre-show. I felt like that was a damn good match, so I was excited whenever that happened. But the Mysterios, I just don't want to see them split up. I don't. Because you know they're going to try to make them do that. Well, why else would they be doing this? Why else would they start this little bit of not seeing eye to eye? Now they're kind of losing matches. It looks like a learning experience for Dominik, but at the same time, why is Rey Mysterio having to be the quote-unquote GOAT in all this or whatever? I don't know. I could be looking way too far into this, and I might be, but just in my opinion, I've kind of been noticing this, and tonight it really jumped off the screen, and I just don't want to see it. I do not need to see Dominik and Rey Mysterio go their separate ways yet. And it's not that I want to see them together. It's just that I don't want to see them fight each other. I don't think that really makes sense. Rey Mysterio would absolutely beat the you-know-what out of Dominik if they were to even have this program. Dominik still doesn't look believable. So, you know, call it what you want. I do not think that it would be a wise idea for them to split it up. So hopefully I'm just wrong here in general and I'm just jumping the gun. But let's see. Another thing that happened. Shinsuke Nakamura defeated Apollo Crews via disqualification. And this was a weird finish. The match wasn't very long either, but it was just kind of weird because Commander Aziz jumped up to the apron and Shinsuke Nakamura kind of hit him, right? But the bell didn't ring. Nothing happened. The official was outside the ring, but she didn't make any announcement or anything like that. And then Apollo Crews, the same thing happened again. Commander Aziz got up to the apron, and then Apollo Crews was running to try to do like a spear type thing on Shinsuke Nakamura. Shinsuke moves out of the way, and then he hits Commander Aziz. And then Shinsuke Nakamura kind of just runs out of the ring, and then the announcers have to say that Shinsuke Nakamura got the win via disqualification. Like, the bell didn't ring. Nothing was announced, anything like that. So I feel like this was a weird finish. But I don't know what they're doing with Apollo Crews. He's been losing. He's been being on the bad side of these programs for a little bit of a run on weeks here. At least, like, probably 3 or 4. I know he's lost to Cesaro. He's taken a pinfall in, like, a 6-man tag match. And now he's losing to Shinsuke Nakamura. Even though it was a disqualification, he definitely looked like the fool in this whole situation because Shinsuke was the one who left with his music playing. So I don't really know. I mean, I didn't expect Shinsuke Nakamura to be the one who's kind of thrusted into this Intercontinental Championship picture. I thought that maybe it was going to be Cesaro because he and Apollo seemed like they were on their way to having a program together. Now it seems like maybe Shinsuke Nakamura. I do feel like whichever babyface takes it off of Apollo Crews, Otis is going to be the one who's there waiting for them as the heel opponent. to maybe chase a little bit and see if he can maybe get his first singles championship and championship in general in WWE. The only thing that Otis has actually won, and I put won in air quotes, is the Money in the Bank briefcase. He's never won a championship, not even a tag team championship. So if he does get in this Intercontinental Championship picture, it will be something new for him. And just being honest, I would be a fan if they decided to give him the championship, the Intercontinental Championship, that is. I think that it would just be something that Otis could possibly use to springboard his career. And you guys all know that that's basically what the Intercontinental Championship is for, to take somebody who is like a mid-card guy, give him a run as a championship, and ultimately boost them up to that top tier. And I don't think that's going to happen with Otis, but he can sit in this mid-tier as a heel champion or just somebody who's always around that championship picture, kind of like Sheamus has kind of always been around that mid-tier championship picture. Even if he's not winning it, he's kind of always just like battling and getting in the way of the contenders who are trying to get their way. I feel like Otis can kind of have a home for himself in that upper mid-card if booked correctly and this whole character change continues to show signs of development and he continues to hit it out of the park, because right now I feel like that's what he's doing. And Chad Gable has a lot to do with that. We didn't get to see the Alpha Academy tonight, but next week hopefully they'll make a return. We don't need to see all these people every week. The fact that John Cena wasn't here, the Alpha Academy wasn't here, I'm all for that. Let some other people have a little bit of airtime. Let some of these other programs get some air to breathe. And I feel like that's kind of what they did with Seth Rollins and Edge getting their match officially announced, and then Bianca Belair, Zelina Vega, Sasha Banks, that whole little program got a lot of airtime, as well as the Roman Reigns stuff as well. So let's move on to some more stuff that happened here on SmackDown. I guess we can go ahead and get to this roll-up so we don't have to end the show with it. But yeah, there was a roll-up. It ended up being Tegan Nox beating Tamina. There was a little bit of a distraction, if you want to call it that. Shotzi Blackheart shot a missile. I'm not sure if that's what it was. That's what they wrote down here, a missile. At Tamina, and it allowed Tegan Nox to take control and then hit the roll-up win. I don't really know if they're going to continue to let Tamina hold those women's tag team championships. I don't know how long Natalya is going to be on the shelf. I mean, she had surgery, so you expect a while. Are they going to just continue to let Tamina come out there with both championships? Are they going to vacate it? I don't really know. I feel like eventually they're going to let her kind of defend them by herself and then maybe do like a tournament of some type, or just like a gauntlet maybe, or something like that, where she's just defeating teams, and then eventually there is a team out there that's going to get the better of her. And I feel like that could definitely happen, but that seems like a long time, and the longer they wait, the more healthy Natalya gets. I know that there was that whole 30-day rule where you have to defend your championship every 30 days if you're a champion. We all know that's a load of crap. They only use that rule whenever they want to, whenever it's a convenient way to take the championship off of somebody, and that could be what they do here. They could easily pull that card and get the women's tag team championships off of Tamina and Natalya. Although these championships really aren't even that important. I mean, just being honest, if you left them on Tamina and just let her kind of hold them until Natalya got healthy, I don't really think anybody would really care that much. I mean, I would if there were women's tag teams waiting there. You know, we don't have Lana and Naomi anymore. We don't have Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. Although we do, but do we really want to see them get the tag team championships again? And if you remember what happened on Monday Night Raw, they kind of had their little confrontation with Nia Jax's face just covered in blood. So I don't think they're going to be going for the tag team championships anytime soon. Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke. Mandy Rose is back on NXT now. Dana Brooke is pregnant. So there you go there. There's another team gone. This division is non-existent. So they had to bring up a tag team from NXT just to have somebody for the champions to go against. And one of the champions is hurt. So, I mean, this is just a complete mess, this whole women's tag team championship picture. And I don't know when it's going to get better. I feel like in the Thunderdome, that whole Thunderdome era, it might have gotten buried, and the damage that was caused, they're still paying the price for it now, and they're not really helping themselves by clearing out and cutting all of these women and sending them down to NXT just to split up a tag team. And I know really Dana Brooke getting pregnant, you really can't do anything about that, but it just shows that maybe the cards are not in the favor of the women's tag team division, and we'll see if that changes. But man, right now those belts do not feel important whatsoever. Let's see what else we have left here to talk about. Not really a lot. Only a couple things here. The Street Profits and the Dirty Dogs have a tag team match, and the Street Profits win after Montez Ford hits a splash after Angelo Dawkins hits a pop-up spinebuster. I do like that combo, the pop-up spinebuster and then Montez Ford hitting the splash from the heavens. I do like that as a tag team finishing move because it's believable and it gives them kind of the best of both worlds. They go for a little bit of a ride, hit the mat really hard, then have a grown man land on them flying from, I don't know, like 15 feet in the air, just depending on how high Montez Ford gets up that particular jump. It's a nice little move to see. But yeah, they get the win over the Dirty Dogs. Not really an important part of the show. Just a nice little entertaining match to pass some time. Now, the last thing we'll talk about here, which is Edge and Seth Rollins. Their match is officially announced. But Edge comes to the ring and he cuts a pretty good promo. He's talking about Seth Rollins and bringing up the past. Talking about how he wanted to leave the past in the past. He had no problem doing that. But Seth Rollins is clearly... He didn't say obsessed with him, but he definitely said he can't leave him alone because he's constantly bringing him up. He's constantly inserting himself into whatever Edge is doing. And the promo that Seth Rollins said last week basically just confirmed it whenever he said that if I can't be the Universal Championship or if I can't be the Universal Champion, then neither can Edge. So Edge shows up tonight and he basically is just ripping Seth Rollins a new one. Seth Rollins wasn't there tonight, so he was on the Jumbotron. And Seth is just basically blowing off everything that Edge is saying. He's not taking it serious. He's laughing in his face. And you could tell he's basically just being a little bit of a smartass the entire time that he's up there. And it was annoying me. It was getting under my skin just because I guess I'm that type of person that's a way to push my buttons is to kind of do that what Seth was doing, just to have that type of arrogance where you're not even taking the argument serious, like you're not giving them a time of day. He even mentions Edge's family, and as you would expect, Edge kind of loses it at that point, and he begins to start to have his veins pop out and tell. That's whenever he really starts to get personal with Seth Rollins and tells him that he's constantly trying to walk in his footsteps, but he can't fill them, and he can continue to try to emulate Edge and his career all that he wants, but it's never going to work because all he will be is a, quote, Edge light. And I think that's where Rollins had heard enough, because that is where he does accept the challenge that Edge lays out for the first time ever, a one-on-one match between Edge and Seth Rollins. It's going to take place at SummerSlam, as it should. And man, this is going to be probably the best one. I'm not even exaggerating here. I do think that these guys are going to burn the house down, no pun intended. I think that Edge and Seth Rollins' styles match up together well. They both know how to sell. They're both passionate, and they have good in-ring psychology. They tell a story, and I really am a fan of both of them. So getting to see them in an actual match is going to be fun, and you could just tell the type of program we're going to get. It's going to be really personal. It's going to be really physical whenever they do have their encounters. I mean, just look at last week. Edge got hit in the face with a camera. You don't ever see that anymore. And they actually touched on it a little bit this week. They mentioned it. It's not like they're trying to run from it. They're actually reminding us. I like that. So I guess that is that's something that we can sink our teeth into. That's going to be an official match at SummerSlam. And I am all for that. 100%. Give me more Edge versus Seth Rollins brawls, promos, just anything. And Seth Rollins, of course, has another fly suit on, as usual. I did see on the internet, though, that Seth Rollins and Sonya Deville tied for best dressed in WWE. I think that if it comes down to like a tie like that, it's pretty clear who you need to give the tiebreaker to. Now, don't get me wrong. Sonya Deville definitely has been dressing sharp ever since she's been in this role, and probably even a little bit before that. She definitely knows how to dress. However, when you look at the outfits that she's wearing, I feel like they're not really that unique. They're not as unique as Seth Rollins anywhere. I mean, they're kind of just plain. They're your regular suits with a tie. And I mean, it's not like they look bad. I mean, she wears them well. She looks good in them. But Seth Rollins suits, I mean, remember that one with paint dripping down with all the different colors of paint? You know, like the silver suit that he had on. Even tonight with the butterfly suit. I mean, his suits, you never see him wear twice. They're extremely unique, and I just feel like he was known for being the drip god, I guess is what him and who was it? Morrison kind of had that little encounter at, I don't know, well, it was Money in the Bank, I think, where they were in the ring and they were kind of going at it like that. I mean, it's no secret that Seth Rollins knows how to dress. And I just feel like if that was a tie, and I know this is completely irrelevant here that I'm talking about, it's something that I saw on social media, but I just personally think that Seth Rollins should have got that award. I mean, that's just my opinion, but I guess that does it here on the SmackDown review. I do appreciate you guys listening. It was nice to get back here with a new microphone and not have to worry about all the audio problems that I've been dealing with. And I'm not really sure why. The other mic that I had, it wasn't a bad one. I'd used it for a while and it was pretty good quality, at least I thought. But when you get something like this, you can definitely tell the difference. And I have done just that. So I'm looking forward to shows coming up. Looking forward to doing the Raw review at least one more time. We'll see how many more. I'll do it however long Matt needs me to. But I know I should be doing it at least one more. So I'm looking forward to getting a chance to do that and continue to cover Raw and SmackDown until all this is back to normal. But with all that being said, I do want to thank you for choosing this podcast and for listening to it, whether you are a first-time listener or a regular listener. I want to thank you for making this part of your weekly routine and continuing to stop by here, and hopefully you will continue to listen to the shows here on the podcast. There are 8 other shows that come out on a weekly basis, and they're all pretty good. They all have their own little twist. They all do their own little thing, and they have their own content, and it's just a nice little one-stop shop for everything that you need in your wrestling heart, your wrestling desires, whatever you need, you can find it here, I promise. So with all that being said, thank you so much once again for listening. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.